Board of Supervisors will convene Supervisor Valenzuela. Would you lead us in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Chaplain Bradley, good morning.
Good morning. Let's pray together. Father, we come here today because there's business to be conducted for the county. But we just look around and want to express gratitude for the blessings that you give us and the place in which we live. We thank you for those who serve. And even as we look at the agenda today, it's a long agenda. Thank you for the people who sit in the office and put together the paperwork, who make the plans, who share these things, and then, Father, they come to the public. Thank you for the participation of our citizens in our government, and that's what makes us truly a great government. And as we look forward to Memorial Day that's coming, Father, we're grateful to be individuals that are part of a grateful nation for those who've sacrificed the utmost, and we just continue to pray for their families and the peace that you can give for them in the midst of their loss. God, in all things, we express gratitude and we give you thanks in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
The board will be convening today as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, Siskiyou Power Authority, and County Service Area 4, and receives no additional compensation.
Supervisor Houck will be absent for the entire day.
Okay. And so the rest of the roll call, Supervisor Valenzuela.
Here.
Supervisor Chris.
Here.
Supervisor Obrin.
Here.
And Supervisor Copsa.
Here. We're at item 4, presentation to the public. This time slot is for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You will be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. The chair can extend the time to 5 minutes for appropriate circumstances. Written comments can be presented, if so desired, by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments. Please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. And Anna, if you would give the instruction, I guess, or indication on how people online can let us know that they would like to speak and how they can do that before we get going.
For those of you on Zoom, if you could please press *9, that will indicate on our end that you wish to speak. And then I believe it is #9 to accept the unmuting when you're called upon to speak.
Let's go to online first today.
Battery 100%.
Chrissy Reynolds, it's your turn to speak.
Good morning.
Hi, Chrissy Reynolds. Good morning, Chrissy Reynolds, COPCO. I want to thank the board.
You cut out.
Oh, sorry, I don't know what's going on.
There you go. You're there.
Let me.
We can hear you.
Okay. I want to thank the board and the county ag department for installing the new air quality monitor at the Topco Community Center and for the other monitors that are now all back at 100%. While installing the new monitor, in fact, we smelled wildfire smoke. For those of us with PTSD from the various incidents within the county of wildfire evacuations. Just seeing and smelling smoke is triggering. We were able to assess the smoke was most likely coming from the Mount Ashland Ski Park as their sensors were in the red. And the monitors around the area showed a pathway towards us. That being said, this is how we can have information in real time. Still unsettling, yet somehow reassuring that it wasn't closer to us. Two things in that vein. Our volunteer fire department, fire board, is in its infancy and in its next incarnation. And with that is inexperience. Inexperience and a lack of long-term knowledge, which is unsettling, which is albeit helpful that we even continue to have people that volunteer. The Mallard Cove Recreation Site has long been a known landing zone for emergency helicopter transport. That access has been blocked by large boulders. CAL FIRE has known of this, as has FERC, as has the county, as well as the KRRC, and yet it was allowed to be blocked. I know from our new fire board president that CAL FIRE is aware of this. It's working to have this removed. And a new way to enter is being worked out. My frustration is how this could have happened once again. Why are Cockle residents continuing to have their safety in jeopardy, either due to incompetence, left hand, right hand, who's in charge here, or just falling through the tracks? Hopefully we won't need that LZ while someone figures this out, but this shows a lack of care for the well-being of our residents.
Chrissy, I'll need you to wrap up, please.
And secondly, we would like to know, okay, is the water safe now? Can we let our animals go down to the water? Is it safe to irrigate from the water?
Okay.
And thank you for your recent letter to regarding the request of full allocation on the water. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else online?
Surely no others online.
I have one in-house public comment. I'm not sure the first name. Ebert is the last name.
Linda.
Linda, okay. You're on. Good morning.
Good morning. I too would like to thank the board for your draft emergency declaration resolution and your letter to FERC.
You can pull it towards you.
And we need your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Linda Ebert. I'm from the Copco area. I come in regard to a matter that the Fire Auxiliary, of which I'm a member, wishes to take up. We find it necessary to reproduce our Copco Lake Wildfire and Safety Evacuation Guide. It features a code red designation, which has been changed. And we also have a change in our fire chief. Tom Bush is now our fire chief. We're sorry to see Francis Gill go, but his name is on this brochure also, so that's another reason for updating it. But my question today is, we featured an upriver access temporary, we called it safe zone, of access to, fishing access to, and this dates back from an old flyer, which we based our brochure on 3 years ago, that also featured access to as an upriver temporary safe zone. And I'm wondering if we can still have a set aside of some place, whether it's access to or It's been suggested there's a meadow by the old Rancher Miller home that would be open enough to have helicopters land and people gather in case the fire came up from Agribeswick, the Agribeswick Junction, and could now conceivably jump the river because it's very narrow in some places. And so that whole area downriver could be closed, with upriver being the only access out, conceivably. So I'm wondering, before we republish, for several reasons, our evacuation guide, if we might straighten out whether we have an upriver designation for a gathering place and or landing pad.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I think I'm going to put you in touch with Mr. Shinoni. Is that correct? Have you met him yet?
Yes.
Okay. He would be your point person, especially for what you're asking, I think. Right? Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Great.
That was all I had. Thank you, Mrs. Susan.
Thank you.
Is Mr. Bradman, the community up there, but they're taking ownership mm-hmm. of this evacuation, we're sure educated. So, yeah, Howard County can help.
Anyone else in-house for public comment? I have several others, but they're for specific items. I'm not seeing any other public comment, so we'll move on to the item 5 consent agenda. Anything to be pulled? If not, I'm looking for action. I have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda.
I got the motion. I missed the second.
Supervisor Open.
All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Oberyn?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsev?
Aye. Item 6A, Tobacco Education Council. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you. I have a handout for y'all.
Thank you for allowing us to present this morning. I'm Stephen Bryan. I'm the Regional and Program Director with the Siskiyou Community Resource Collaborative, and I'm the Chair of the Tobacco Education Council, and I'm here with other agencies and volunteers that are part of the Tobacco Education Council as well. I just wanted, my part of this, I wanted to present on what we've been up to since 2015 as far as promoting tobacco education throughout the county for both youth and adults. We've been hosting a annual art contest through the local schools for the last 3 years. We just judged another round of art contest for this year. Out of those art contests, we came up with a logo a few years ago on Don't Drain Your Power. You might have seen those around with shirts and banners and other marketing things that we've been doing throughout the county. We speak at local tabling events since 2015, which include parenting classes, free community events, programs that we do through the local schools, like girls' circles, the boys' councils, play groups, and other anywhere we touch the community, we're always promoting tobacco education. This year at Kids Day Festival, we had over 2,000 attendees, and we were able to reach a whole lot of kids. We had about 1,300 kids there this year, so we are always looking for any opportunity to engage the community and provide that education. And then on top of that, we also do community education classes about tobacco. We've worked with other organizations to do workshops on vaping and how tobacco is harmful to the community. So at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Anna.
Good morning. My name is Anna Nesco. I work for the County Office of Education. I am the Tobacco Use Prevention and Education Coordinator, and I also have been on the TEF board for about 9 years, and I serve as the treasurer, essentially. I help take care of the monies that we have received over the years for the Tobacco Education Council, and help keep track of them and do all the purchasing and that sort of thing, as well as participate in all the other activities. So, and I work in the school. So our program works through 6th grade through 12th grade for 2B is the acronym, and we do a lot of different services throughout the schools. So I help be the liaison in terms of what we're seeing in the schools and what's happening, and also what we're trying to achieve with some more community standards for doing education and prevention work for tobacco and nicotine use. So, as you may or may not know, that right now, vaping is a really big concern in our schools. A lot of schools really at the top of their list in terms of what they see with some problematic behaviors for students. There's been a really big increase in the amount of students that are referred to me for one-on-one cessation and intervention. So all of our campuses in Siskiyou County are a certified tobacco-free campus. So that means no tobacco or nicotine product is allowed on campus. Even any devices for any type of tobacco and nicotine product are not allowed. So, you know, even if a student claims, like, there's these different vape pens that have melatonin in them, even if, you know, they claim there's no nicotine, doesn't matter, it's not allowed on our campuses. So when a student is in possession on campus, then they can be referred to me for tobacco cessation and intervention services. So I see a lot of students one-on-one and work with them to try and help identify what's going on, if I can help them quit and address all the other different circumstances that are contributing to their use. And so there has been a really large increase in the amount of students that are being referred to our program for cessation and intervention. It used to be for like a really busy school year, I'd maybe get 15 to 20 referrals. Now I get like over 50 referrals a year. So it's easily doubled within the last 2 years. And I know those are just the students that are getting caught. That's not indicative necessarily of who is using, how many students are using, but there's just a much higher prevalence of vape products. And we can talk about that for a long time, but that's not why we're here. So that is a big portion of what I do, and then we do we do prevention curriculums for our schools, we do youth development projects, we have a tobacco peer ed project that we do every year with our middle schoolers, so a variety of different projects to try and normalize not using tobacco and nicotine and try and help young people find their motivation of why they would not want to be a tobacco or nicotine user. So that's a little bit about my contribution, what I do. And then I was going to talk to you just a little bit also about the Master Settlement Agreement, which happened in 1998. And it was the majority of the states across the U.S. that essentially sued 7 different tobacco companies and won. And within that Master Settlement Agreement, there was a lot of different things that were agreed upon. And a lot of them have to do with the way that tobacco companies are advertising and specifically targeting youth. You know, if you remember Joe Camel, that wasn't targeted at, you know, a 40-year-old chewer or smoker. That's directly targeted at youth. Because tobacco companies know if they can get young people hooked, they have a lifetime user. And that is a revenue stream for them, and that is what they're after at the end of the day. And so with the Master Settlement Agreement, then there's a lot of language about the way tobacco companies are allowed to advertise and not allowed to advertise, and then it also created a payment funds that have to be set up with these 7 different tobacco companies that are to be paid in perpetuity so long as those tobacco companies are still selling cigarettes and they have to continue to pay the money. And so that's paid to many different states throughout the U.S. and including California and all the different counties. And so Siskiyou County, of course, is a recipient of the Master Settlement Agreement dollars. On average, Siskiyou County receives a little over $400,000 each year from the Master Settlement Agreement, so that's coming directly from the tobacco companies. And separate from that is the way the state of California taxes tobacco and nicotine products, and those taxes that come directly from how tobacco and nicotine products are sold comes in to fund programs like mine, other different prevention programs, and those dollars also go to, you know, Medi-Cal and other programs within California also. So some of those Master Settlement dollars were originally intended to also help prevent some prevention programs, though that really never came to fruition at a wide scale. And so most government agencies that have received Master Settlement dollars have used those for just the other variety of tasks that have to be taken care of within a government agency. And so far, since 1999 was the first Master Settlement Agreement payment that came out, then Siskiyou County has received just over $11,700,000 from these, which if we're going to put some products that are not contributing to the health of our overall population, then at least there is some retribution from that. And We have been receiving, thankfully, from you guys, have been the board has been so generous to be able to provide some of those dollars to our countywide efforts as a Tobacco Education Coalition. And we have the total amount of money, I don't think it's in front of me, but we have received a variety probably of money. We've received $10,000 a year back in 15, 16, 17, those years, and then it's gone down. And then, of course, through the COVID years, we weren't able to spend very much money, and we've gotten a little bit of money the last couple of years. And we've done a large variety of things with those services as well, which I think Stephen talked about. And then this year, we are coming to also to ask to continue our funding so that we can continue the work that we've been doing in the community. And we're also asking potentially for more money this year to start a pilot program that we think could be really beneficial for some of our youth. And Amanda's going to introduce that idea and talk to you guys about that. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Can I get the spelling of your last name?
Yes, it is H-A-N-I-S-K-O.
Hello, thank you for letting us be here today and present to you. My name is Amanda Berryhill with the California Health Collaborative. I'm also a member of the Tobacco Education Council for about, I think, at least 6 years now that I've been part of this. As Anna mentioned, vaping is a huge problem within our community, within our youth particularly. As professionals in the community health field and tobacco prevention field, we hear so many stories, especially from and about our youth. We're either hearing it from parents, professionals within the education system, and it's scary what you hear. The addiction rates are just absolutely through the roof right now, and even, you know, when we hear, oh, we don't see as much vaping this year as last year, there's new products on the market that are easier to hide. They are the ones that go in your lip. It's called Zyn, is the most popular brand. It was a flavored product, though they're not supposed to be sold in California anymore. Those products are still available in youth, and they're extreme nicotine amounts. That's what's contributing to these really high addiction rates. So what we would like to introduce is a pilot program with Wairika Union School District. We chose that school because that's where we've identified the most gap in services for tobacco prevention and intervention for students that are either caught vaping, have an addiction problem, or are considered at risk through a risk assessment that they are completing through that district. We would like to use the Stanford curriculum, which is standard throughout our county, thanks to Anna, to implement a tobacco and nicotine program to prevent use, but also to intervene for addicted youth. Young people are telling us that they use nicotine to cope. Addiction is not a coping skill that youth should have. We should be teaching them positive coping skills and support youth who are struggling with this issue. And we like to do it with this program. We would like to request that the board allocate $25,000 to the Tobacco Education Council to implement this pilot program. Eventually, we would really like this program to be throughout the county of Siskiyou, but we have to start somewhere, and we know that funding can be really difficult to obtain, so we thought that we would be able to serve the students of the school district, starting with that amount, and then hopefully find additional funding through either grants or through foundations to expand this throughout Siskiyou County, because we know where it goes. Union School District is not the only place having trouble with this, and we really want to expand that, but this is a starting place for us. Thank you. Any questions for any of us?
Thank you for your presentation, and thank you for clarifying that you are the tobacco council that we have given in the past, because I wasn't quite sure as you rolled out what you were presenting. I'll bring it back to the board here in a minute. I guess one of the difficulties I will have is this board has targeted Wairika for homeless dollars to the tune of $600,000 over the next 2 years. We're a board of supervisors for the entire county, and I get a little uptight about targeting just certain areas. And so I'll have difficulty with that. I'll let you know that up front. And I don't know that you'll get my support for just a pilot program. It has to go countywide. But more disturbing to me is that we focus on tobacco, and yet drugs and alcohol are a huge problem in our schools, and nobody comes here asking for money for that. And I think it's not that tobacco isn't a problem, but I would like to see a combination of tobacco, alcohol, and drugs. For me, it's encouraging to hear that tobacco products are not allowed on our school campuses, but yet we can't get permission for the sheriff's office to take a drug dog through our schools, and that's disturbing for me. So that's kind of where I'm at, and I'll bring it back to our board and see what anybody else has to say. Anyone else?
You brought up a question of the schools aren't allowing the dogs in the school?
Some schools, yeah.
Oh, some schools. Yeah, I know that your program touches various projects and we're funded through a partnership with the Health and Human Services.
Yes.
I'm also interested, of course, Kelly White, that aspect to it, what that would look like scaled out and all those sorts of factors. Lots of funding, the $25,000 from the county, would that be the whole, what you're requesting? Is that an addition to what's already been funded? Is that an addition to your current request for funding also?
No, I think we're imagining that to be like the annual amount for the next fiscal year. Yeah.
Thank you. You clarify my question. It's perfect. And then are the schools willing to match in any regards?
That's a good question. This board has really tried to function as its entity where we as individual employees are coming to volunteer to try and to bolster the efforts of what's happening in various efforts on a kind of community level when we all come together to collaborate. And so we honestly hadn't thought of that route at that point in time. We were more thinking about, like, what is this collaborative board doing that is trying to amplify the other efforts that are going on with each individual agency that's coming to the board.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And in regards to a pilot program, of course, I'm interested in why that you have to walk before you can run. And so if it is a pilot program, I would be interested to see how that would be rolled out through what the timeline is for the rest of the county. Okay. So if you are thinking of this Puerto Rico, this on your 2025, it'll be also next school, year 2026 will be in these schools as well. And then like Puerto Rico, of course, there's a large population here. You get outside, there's a smaller population, how that would roll out through more rural areas.
Yeah, if I may add to that a little bit about the countywide efforts, as well as your comment about including drugs and alcohol. So the funding that we receive through Prop 56 for our tobacco education programs that Anna and I have are limited to tobacco. The MSA dollars are open, so we can absolutely include other drugs and alcohol and mental health and, you know, really try to treat the whole person within this program. So that is absolutely possible. The reason why we are suggesting starting with Barica is just because we were concerned with the amount of money it would cost to do countywide, and we're trying to be considerate of budget. However, I have talked with the Ford Family Foundation and the McConnell Foundation about this issue, about potential match. If we could get enough dollars to do this countywide, because in reality, it takes staff time. We need a person to be able to go to all of these schools and talk with the youth and have the time to be there. So if we can secure enough funding to be able to do that, absolutely countywide is possible. We started with Wairika because that was where the gap was within services that exist already, and they have a lot of students, so we wanted to be able to serve a wide variety. But absolutely, we'd really love to expand this. It's, you know, that just depends on amount of money to be able to staff somebody.
This pilot, you know what the rollout would be future years for different schools. I mean, I see this as more as the seed money.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
More as the seed money. You kind of can't fund the whole program. More as the seed money to bring some money in.
Absolutely.
And, you know, with a lot of prevention programs, one thing I'll just add real quick too is there is a focus now on being able to, it's not just like, here are the facts about tobacco and nicotine and why they might be harmful to your health, and they are really expanding a lot more into the neuroscience of addiction and, you know, how the different receptors in your brain are affected once you start using a substance that is addictive when your brain is not fully developed. And it talks about the social influences they're getting, as well as what are the social emotional factors that are coming into play in terms of, is this person dealing, you know, with really hard circumstances in their life, and they're trying to use it as a coping mechanism, and what are healthy coping mechanisms. So even though it might just be about one particular product, it does start to touch into the other areas of a young person's life and what is going on, and that does carry over into other substances. And I just throw it out there too. I know there's a group of us that would be happy to talk about all the other prevention efforts that are going on with cannabis and alcohol between DARE and behavioral health. And the county office also has a health educator that is working on fentanyl and drug prevention information as well. And so I know that is a huge concern. So I hear you, and it is very valid. And so we'd be happy to potentially come back and talk about that topic at another time as well.
Just one more thing about the schools. We are working with the schools
countywide. Last year, we brought Friday Night Live groups back to the county. We have a group at Mead High School that the resource centers work with that concentrates on anti-vaping. And the other schools are all starting up their own standalone chapters. I'm meeting with Dunsmuir High School next week to get a chapter started there in the fall. But the kids are really being proactive and wanting to lead the charge of eliminating tobacco products from their school. They don't feel safe going in the bathrooms. They don't feel safe. They feel like they're being bullied at school. They don't vape. So we are doing our best to work with these other organizations and kids to help support them as well.
Anyone else?
Sure. Answer. Who made the flyer?
I don't know.
One of my pet peeves is, and it seems like to me it's buried in the bottom, is that Siskiyou County ranked 56 or 58. This is something I've been on the soapbox since I've been a supervisor. Yeah. And I look at all the money that we spent and we brought in, and we're not moving the needle.
Yeah.
So I think, to me, you got to blow this up and think of another way. I get the pilot program. I think I've been involved in one too many pilot programs, and we're not moving the needle. And I think we got to think about it from a different perspective. What that is, I don't know. But all I do know is we have the best water and the best air, and we're at 56 out of 58 counties, and that's unacceptable to me, quite honestly. My wife works at Dunsmuir Elementary. You know, I see a lot of social issues there with the lack of parenting, quite honestly. And I think there's other ways to attack this than just going after teenage kids going into vaping or whatever. Drugs and alcohol have been, when I was in high school back in the 70s, for God's sake, that's always been around. I think you steer these kids to better alternatives. Again, I don't know what the answer is, but I do know that as much as I kind of share Supervisor Cobb's concerns about funding, you know, maybe Wairika is not the location. Maybe it's Doris, Dunsmuir. So we take a small bite at the apple, try to influence change. Again, I don't know, but I do see all the money that we brought in, and I haven't seen the needle move, so I'm a little suspect there. You kind of allude, you know, and I think this is a societal thing. One of the things that I think is really unfortunate, so as cops, if you're on First Five, mm-hmm. they tied the funding to tobacco funds. It's like, so do you want us to get rid of tobacco, or do you want us to keep funding First Five? That's it. We should disconnect that. And I think the same thing, when we talk about funding, we need to look at it from a different perspective. So I just want that as input. I'm still open to a pilot program, but I think, it, you know, again, 56 out of 58, so I would like to see that instead of here in a bullet point, because I think that has more relevant value to parents, grandparents, those kind of people. Mm-hmm. That's my input.
Supervisor Ogden.
So many things are running through my mind. I would love to see a program that actually produces a solid, number one, data that you can come back with and say, we help this many people. We have this many success stories. Instead of a really pretty piece of paper with, you know, numbers that are marginal. Maybe Doris is a place to do it. Maybe a smaller community with kids at risk that you can really quantify. That you have a huge impact on instead of 5 out of 1,000. You have 5 out of 50. It's a way bigger number. With a working, successful program that you can come back to us and say, we came up with this program and it worked, and these are the kids that we helped, and their families are better, and that these kids are better, and they're shiny and happy and moving forward with their lives. Instead of, yeah, this seems to be kind of okay, but I want to see collaboration with these different agencies. I want to see, you know, progress in a really forward way that you can come back and say, we can take this project and move it forward to all these different areas and, you know, use, whether it's grant funding, we've got McConnell, we've got Ford, whoever, and this is a project that we can take and be proud of and move forward throughout the county. Not just like, yeah, we kind of used up that $25,000 and we're not exactly sure what we can do with it. I want you to come back here with numbers, with progress, with people that you've actually helped, instead of like, yeah, we kind of have it. Does that make sense to you? I mean, it's tangible.
Can I just do a follow-up real quick? Sure. So I would love to see the tell me that you're partnering with the DARE program, those kind of things. I think you can, you know, leverage all that you can bring in to try to move this needle, as I said before. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I wouldn't turn down any programs for Doris Tillake or McLeod. I'd be remiss in District 1. We think of the Wairika School District. The Wairika Union High School District actually takes in Cockville, Montague, Little Shasta, I think Holmbrook, Grenada. So when we think about it, I respect Hobbs' concern about just money to Wairika. We need to challenge that. But it actually encompasses more than just the city of Wairika. It takes in parts of District 1 and the other districts as well. So it's not just Wairika Central. You know, like, be remiss in not advocating for Little Shasta and Montague and Cockville.
So I think one of the caveats that this board needs to remember is that when we have funded tobacco council in the past, it's been for countywide. And that's the only way I could support it. The DARE program, as good as it is, only goes to schools that will accept it. Yep. All schools don't. So as much as we can paint a picture of what programs we have that are good, we have to remember that some of our schools won't accept some of these programs. And to me, the schools need to ante up as well. The Siskiyou County Board of Education member, the new superintendent, Alan Carver, has committed $100,000 to First Five for school readiness. Those are the kind of partnerships that we need to be dealing with versus just the county putting dollars on the line.
Sure.
I'll remind you as well that this board for our county and services that are going to be provided for 24-25 are already looking at a 5% reduction across the board. So where we can find money to hit countywide, I'm there.
Mm-hmm. So if I could just interject real quick.
Sure.
I see where you're going with this, and I do believe more in a countywide thing, but you're involved with the Family Resource Center.
Yeah.
I mean, you have the DARE program. You know, Dunsborough Elementary does allow the thing. I think you maybe look where you can concentrate and get a bigger value out of it, and then prove that it's working there. It's data centric. I mean, and I quite honestly think you need to start at a younger age, sixth grade and up. You know, once I'm just too long since I've been a teenager to think. You know, you're already starting moving down whatever path that is, college, sports, you know, and then the vices that come along with that. So I think we, again, I would like to see a different tack. Instead of, we're going to try another pilot program that, with all the money that we spent, I'm still at 56 out of 58 counties. That's not working for me at this moment in time. So, thank you.
One of the other challenges that we're up against with MSHA funding through Prop 51 is preventative money is gone under that proposition. Mm-hmm. A lot of voters didn't understand that, but yet it was a very close vote. And if you look at the map, most of California voted against that. Except a few counties. And what it means is for, you know, Steve, I know with the collaboratives, you do great work there. And please, my comments are not related to the work that you can produce. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to keep us, I guess, focused. But that preventative dollars are going away. offer is going to potentially hit our family resource centers to the tune of 800,000 to a million two per year that is no longer available. And I don't know how we're going to deal with that because right now there's no flexibility to come and backfill that at this point. So the challenge is greater than, I think, than just, you know, asking for the 25,000 that you're asking for today. I'm okay with the amount of contribution that we have, I think, already budgeted. Beyond that, I don't know what we... Did I say something wrong? Go ahead.
Yes.
Okay.
Angela Davis, County Administrator. We are currently in the process of reviewing the 24-25 county budget. And yes, there is a 5% reduction for county departments, but we're also reviewing the contributions to others that with an additional 5% or even greater than that, because we do have to take care of county first, our home first. So it may be greater than 5% for contributions to others, depending upon how you're able to process.
How it shakes out. Okay.
Correct.
Oh, but I guess where I'm at is what we've contributed in the past, whatever that is, it's not been 25,000.
Correct.
I think last year...
2,500.
So I'm just saying... I've been okay with that. I know we've been up to as high as 10,000, but I'm willing to take the request and we can look at it, but I'm just telling you that unless the program is countywide, I won't support it. I don't know how else to say that. So I don't know what, there is no action on this. I think this is just a direction item. Is that correct?
No, it requests.
It requests is just for the direction to staff is the way I'm reading that.
Regarding the Tobacco Education Council request to allocate funds to the SISCU Tobacco Education Council.
Right.
So it does have a
directive.
Supervisor Chris, go ahead.
In regards to that contribution to others, we have to be owner off the Peter to pay Paul. And so it already goes towards the contribution to others, already has a contribution at this point in time. The family resource centers throughout the county, those youth programs, as well as the libraries, which serves a role as well. So as we look at that pot of funding, that limited deal, I think we'll offer it and undermine even the efforts of Tobacco Foundation.
If this is a recommended motion, and I don't know that it really is, it doesn't say 25,000. It's just basically a direction, right?
Correct.
So what's the board's wishes on this?
So I would say this, I think that the timing is poor here. We're going through a tough budget. All you got to do is look at the state and follow it all the way down. So I would go back to the drawing board, come up with a better plan, if you will, something a little bit more defined and a specific request. I think we need to wait till probably September for final budget. That gives you some time and leeway, who you can partner with, tell me that we have someone else's money that's coming in that we can maybe help match or offset type of thing. I'm certainly open to that. But I can't support moving forward at this time, knowing the uncertainty when it comes to the budget.
Is there other information that you guys would like in the future in terms of youth prevention and education when it comes to substance use? What would be the most beneficial for you as a board to know in terms of what type of presentation or information would you feel would really be valuable in the future to understand the breadth of the youth problem as well as the variety of community resources that are involved with trying to address the problem?
I am more targeted to outcomes and solutions versus just pilot or opportunities. I mean, I know the education piece is critical, but as Supervisor Valenzuela said, we still rank 56 out of 58, and that needle hasn't moved.
When
you can bring something to us that is a countywide, or at least for me, countywide, that's going to move that needle and show an outcome, you'll gain my interest. How's that? Anyone else?
More specifics about what programs are in place or what you're looking at to produce programs? What are your goals? What are your expectations? What successes you've already had? What are those numbers? What's the data? How many kids you serve? What are your plans to serve? Where are you going to do it? What's your capacity? Who do you have working for you? Who are you working with? Those kinds of things.
Thank you.
Sure. And I think also the resilience, thank you for your presentation. I know we can't solve it for 25 or 5 or 10, but in regards to the coordination of efforts, resiliency in your program, you talked about this, the state budgets can go up and down, different agencies. So the partnerships that you have, you said McConnell and Ford and those sorts of things, but the resiliency in your program, because I'd hate to invest 1 year and then just have to be forced to set up, you know, my successor would have to be cut up next week. That the resiliency is your point.
Thank you. Do you have all that we can give you at this point?
Yeah, we have a lot of that data and those partnerships, so that would be hard to put together. So.
Right. Yes, all of that that you're speaking about are all through collaborations. For this presentation, we really focus on what just tech itself has done with the funding that you've supported us, but we have so many other collaborations that we can definitely highlight in a future presentation. And just to be certain, you said that budget would be finalized in September, so you'd like us to come back before September to...
It gives you opportunity to come back with something.
Yes, okay, because we can outline. And in that time, I can try to connect with these other foundations to see if we can make this a countywide effort and if we can find something like that. Also, if you'd be interested, California Health Collaborative does have this program in Fresno area, so I can pull some data for how successful it has been already for them, so that we can get some data there as well. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Steve, we'll follow up. I can give you some more ideas.
Yep.
Down there. No, Justin.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Is Graham coming? The note I have is he'll be here at 11:30.
Yes, correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so just want to make sure I don't want to hold you up in case you're it, the only one. So, okay. All right, good. Let's move on to item 6B, the FEMA. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Quinn Side. I'm a civil engineer, and I work with the FEMA risk analysis bridge. And today we'll talk about the map revision, the fund mapping. I'll go over quickly the first study overview, revised product, flood insurance impact, and particular message, and the question and answer later on. We're going to have this details presentation this afternoon under our consultation coordination officers meeting at the 4 Jones, 1 p.m. Just give you an idea of the timeline. This project started in 2020, even before my time with the FEMA. And now we're in 2024, and the project to finish by 2025. It usually takes 3 to 10 years, and this one is 5 years. So this is considered a small project for this kind of study. What it does is they go to the request first, go to a hydrology study, and then go to the post-preliminary coordination meetings today. And after that, we go to community outreach and go to the appeal process and officialize it and finalize the product. Next, please. And just show you the result. The difference between before and after. You see on the left is black and white, and on the right is all the detailed study that we did it for last, you know, the change between 2011 and 2024. And we include the 500-year flood study, the brown area, those new study that we, because the climate change, we add on the new studies. And instead of only 100-year flood event, we're going up to the 500-year now. Next slide, please. What is affecting? The effect is the insurance rate from high risk, zone AE, to zone A. the moderate with shaded areas on X and the low with unshaded on X. Well, we want to make sure that people know that when it's rain, it's flooded. So people think that why are you doing this in a sunny day? Sunny day, you do this because you want to prevent and things change. Yes. And what is high risk area? High risk area is have a percentage of happening once in 100 years. And the people think, wow, you know, this is nothing. But things happen all the time. People build the highway, changing the topography, and the water moving. And so you're thinking you're safe, but next thing you know, you're in the flood zone. Because
is dam removal part of that equation?
Everything.
Okay.
Everything. Structure removal, construction, highway construction, and levee. Some people build a burn and think that this doesn't impact anybody, but impact them straight. Because you move the direction for it. Next, please. The moderate risk is the shaded area. The place has a 0.2%, which is translated to 500-year flood. Or it's 1% 100-year flood with a, you know, water depth less than 1 foot. So those are considered moderate risk. So please, the low risk is unshaded. It's like a 500-year flood zone. So when we have mandatory flood insurance, you don't really need that. But it's good to know what you are and what can happen. Like as I mentioned before, some area the people build a burn for to protect their own. But what happens is the burn is long enough, it changes the direction of the flow and impact the downstream stuff. Okay, the fire insurance basically, I'm not a fire insurance expert, but this is just some idea. We have in-house expert if you need it. It's a 100-year flood. It's mandatory. And in the zone A and the zone A. No mandatory if it's in the 500-year flood zone. So by this new study, there's a potential flood insurance saving because if you the detailed study, we use all the latest topography, LiDAR, or also we use a local survey if necessary. We see structure there, we do the survey and make sure when they do the hydraulic study, the cross-section is updated. So the water survey, the elevation changing accordingly. Yes, please. Well, this is other front insurance options. You can go up, you can go down, maintain the same. So it all depends what is the study shows. So this is why we have an appeal period. For people, there's an impact. They can look at it and challenge. See, your result is not good enough. Why? We show you why, because you have a structure or you have a changing of the topography. That's it. Why are some flood zone changing? As I just mentioned to you before, because things change. You build a new freeway, changing the topography, or you build a new factory, or you know things, and the land use from agricultural land to industrial land, and that obstruct the whole flow pattern. Next, please. Some people think my house never flooded. As I mentioned earlier, things can change. Most people thinking that they're not, but the 25% of flood insurance claim in the U.S. is outside the natural high risk. People thinking that I need a low risk, I don't need it, but the statistics show that 25% the flood insurance claim is that outside the natural high risk. So just when the echoing the result, this is the result, the data shows that. Next, please. Okay, if you have any question I don't answer, I can answer, or you have a future, you can email me or call me, and we have an in-house expert to answer any of your questions.
Are you working with our community development director and our OES deputy director?
We have contacted them.
Are you working with them?
I am not myself, because I just joined this 6 months ago.
And because this will be finished, it looked like on 2025.
Yes.
We've been told that the new mapping for the Klamath with regard to dam removal won't be for at least another 3 years.
That will be coming. You, I think, slides before, please. Take, oh, no, this one. Just up. Okay, you see that. Loma, the letter of the mapping division, you can request the changing, you know, updating. You can request the FEMA data. We have major changes. We need updating. Then we go through the process.
So I think the last time we had a FEMA representative via online for this board, no one with regard to the Klamath Renewal Corporation, that project in dam removal, had put in an application for what I think you're talking about here.
Well, again, if it's within the, see, we cannot hold in the project within the, like, you say 3 years, the removal. So that would hold in the project for 3 years until certainty.
But meanwhile, we have homes that have been destroyed for fire that are trying to be rebuilt, and the floodplain could determine the height of the foundation, and they're not waiting 3 years. So how do we deal with that?
Well, we just, right now, we're using the best we have. Like you say, it's a burden. So if it's showing, we take into consideration. We have a similar case in Southern California. They want to use a new burn, for instance. Mm-hmm. And they say, we got a budget all done. We're going to build this next year. And the project's supposed to be finished. The whole project is supposed to finish next year. So, like I say, it's right there. But this is 3 years, this is the same year, pretty much, 1 year after. So we're holding that a little bit because it's a limited time and we can adjust it. But if it's 3 years down the road, you're not pushing too far. So we're looking to and talk to the county and, like I said, make sure what status they are. Are they firm, 3 years to move, or are they just study? So those are things that can be discussed and talked about.
So before I bring it to the board for questions, Mr. Dean or Mr. Shinoni, do you have any comments or questions for this presentation? No? Okay.
Elizabeth,
you, oh, sorry. I thought you were telling me Graham was here.
Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator. I just want to clarify for the board and for the public that this process is separate from the process that will occur several years following dam removal, where the Klamath River corridor will be reassessed, should be reassessed by FEMA to incorporate new floodplain mapping. The only areas that are impacted by this effort right now are within Scott Valley. Community Development did review the maps, and they did confirm that there are no changes to the Klamath River corridor right now. So I just want to make that distinction, since we have had several discussions about flooding, or potential flooding following dam removal, that that will be a separate effort. And Chair Kopseff is correct. To our knowledge, KRC has not submitted a request to complete that. That will occur following dam removal.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. And are we in agreement with regard to what's being proposed in the Scott Valley? Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have no further questions.
Supervisor Chris.
Yeah, I just had a question in regards. Thanks for coming before us. You got a full 6 months underneath your belt, so you're the expert now.
I have a 40 years civil engineering process.
That wonderful, in regards to, I'm thinking of other areas, a little broader than the Scott, just for this question. Is there sources of funding within FEMA for people that may be within a flood zone, grants or funding to put in berms or put in things that would remove them from a flood zone, or their programs through FEMA on there?
That's a good question, because FEMA has a mitigation program.
Right.
So if it's part of a county mitigation plan, each time that has a disaster, the state reserves certain amount of money from the FEMA disaster fund for that purpose. Especially the mediation program is a 5-year program that all the county maintain that. So if it's part of it, yes.
Okay.
So make sure it's in a part of the mediation program.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Supervisor Hogan, anything?
I'm good.
Supervisor Bouncer?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're at item 6C. Oh, no, sorry, we're going to hold that one until 11:30.
Can we take a little break?
Sure.
Short break.
Okay, fine.
Audio here? Thank you.